this is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Michael Monks. Pursuing the American Dream is the next installment of the Mercantile Library series, Beyond Civility. It's set for next week. The panelists, some of the panelists anyway, will join us now for a preview. On Cincinnati Edition now, our Democratic State Representative from Ohio's 31st District, Bridget Kelly. She joins us on the phone. Hi, Representative Kelly.
Hi, thanks so much for having us today.
We also have Pantsuit Politics co-host and co-author of the book, I Think You're Wrong, But I'm Listening, Beth Silvers. Welcome back, Beth.
Thanks so much, Michael.
And we have Mortar Development Director Derek Brazil. Welcome back, Derek.
Thank you for having me.
Okay, so I want to just start with the general question. What is the American dream anyway? And Representative Kelly, I think we'll start with you on that.
So first of all, thanks so much for having us on, for having such an important conversation. I mean, I think the American dream for people is the idea that if you work hard, you can get ahead. It's that you can live a good life and provide for your family. It's that you can retire with safety and security. And I think that increasingly people are feeling like that's still a little bit out of reach.
And Derek, do you agree with that, or you want do you have anything to add to what you perceive the American dream to be?
Yeah, I agree with what was said. I think it's hard work, but it's also opportunity. It's also having a community of people that will surround you and provide access to the resources that you need to be successful. It's also having a system in place that isn't unfairly benefiting one versus the other. I think it's a whole variety of things that go into this idea of the American dream.
Beth, your thoughts on it?
Well, I think that's what is so exciting about this program that we're about to host, because if you ask 10 different people from 10 different backgrounds that question, I think you'd get 10 really different answers. What is the American dream for whom? And how long should that dream last? And what should that dream mean beyond maybe getting a business opened or getting your family up and running? What does it mean in retirement? What does it mean throughout the course of your life? And I think it's going to be a controversial discussion, and I'm excited about it.
So I hear, at least from Derek and Representative Kelly, that the American dream involves working hard and achieving. But what we're hearing, certainly in political debates today and in journalistic reports, is that people are working hard. And they're not making enough money to pay for their health insurance. They're not making enough money to support their families. They're paying too much of their income to housing. What impact is just today's economy having on the idealized American dream, Representative Kelly?
Well, I mean, I think it's really frustrating for people, and our economy doesn't work the best when you have a small group of people with a large amount of resources and even more people sort of powering those folks at the top. You know, I think that there are a lot of people who work hard every day and contribute to the success of companies and communities and, you know, really have earned and deserve a chance to share in that success. And when people do well, they can feed other parts of our economy. So if you're not making enough money to pay your bills, you're not stopping for a cup of coffee on your way to work. You're not tossing something extra into your cart at the grocery store, which then creates more hours for more folks to work and power our economy. So I think we really need to be thoughtful about how do we create the American dream and make it attainable for people in all sectors and all sections of our economy, and not just really looking at the top as a barometer of how well we're doing.
And Derek, at Mortar, I'm sure you're dealing with aspiring entrepreneurs mm-hmm. all the time, people who are looking for that part of the American dream, starting out on my own and creating a new enterprise. Talk about some of the people that you encounter and maybe some of the fears that they have to overcome in order to go out on their own.
Totally. So Mortar has been around for 5 years, and we've been working across the Cincinnati region to connect historically marginalized entrepreneurs with the tools and resources they need to be successful. The majority of our students are African-American. 67% are African-American females, which is the largest group of, or excuse me, the fastest growing group of entrepreneurs in America. But the reality is, they're having also a really difficult time accessing the resources that they need. If the American dream, if the idea of it is you have a great idea, then that great idea should translate into a business, right? But that's not the case for so many of our graduates. So Mortar has had to step in and provide access to capital, access to space, access to culturally competent technical assistance to give these people an opportunity. And a great example of this is a entrepreneur of ours named Chanel. Chanel has a business in Over the Rhine right now, and it's called Own Lane. She started in our program several years ago in our third class, and she's had this passion for style and fashion, and it was very difficult for her to have access to resources. So she actually left and went to Atlanta, but she came back, and she was able to have opportunities through Procter & Gamble, curating a fashion show through the Cincinnati Music Festival, and we were able to help her get access to a space on Vine Street. And she's had that space, and she was named the Over the Rhine Entrepreneur of the Year in February. So she's a great example of someone who has had ideas, had always access to resources, but when given an opportunity, she's been successful. And what we're trying to do is replicate that experience over and over and over again to show that if you take a risk and provide some opportunities to people who may not look like you, sound like you, have the same background as you, they can be successful.
So over the weekend, I was playing around on Twitter, as I do, and was reading some of the blowback that Whole Foods was getting after the corporate office decided that they weren't going to be offering health insurance benefits anymore to part-time employees. And the specifics of the blowback seem to be related to the fact that Whole Foods is now owned by Amazon, which of course is owned by Jeff Bezos, who is the richest person in the world. And so you get this conversation about someone like Jeff Bezos, who has lived some people's idea of the American dream, started a small business in his garage and made it all the way to be the richest person on the planet, but then has grown an enterprise that is so large that it employs all these folks that may not be treated fairly in the eyes of many people. And Beth, I wonder how that narrative is impacting our political discourse on the issue of what it means to be an American and to achieve as one.
I think that gets right to the heart of the issue of the American dream, because we have said that the American dream, in the form of acquiring the kind of wealth that Jeff Bezos has acquired, is the goal for everyone, without recognizing that that doesn't work. And so we have an environment where we've made it harder for people to organize around labor concerns. That's playing out with Amazon right now. We have an environment where Amazon's tax structure is virtually unregulated. You know, at what point do we ask people to contribute back who've attained that American dream? And I think that's a huge part of this conversation. And that doesn't have to be antagonistic to Jeff Bezos or anyone else. But we do have to recognize technology, climate change, worker rights. We have a lot of big issues that we have kind of put to the side in this pursuit of great wealth that we need to deal with.
Representative Kelly, when you're talking to constituents, what do you find are their biggest concerns, or what do they see as their biggest obstacles to being fully fulfilled in their American dream?
I think that, you know, there are a couple things that happened related to that. So first of all, you know, I think that we have a lot of people in our district who are working really hard every day to have a better life for themselves and their families. And sometimes they feel like systems are working against them instead of for them. And so I think we need to be really mindful about systems that exist and how we can change them to actually suit the needs of the people that they are designed to serve. You know, I think if people are working hard and trying to have a better life, we need to help lift them up instead of put roadblocks in their way. I think another thing is, you know, it matters who serves in elected office, because that diversity of perspectives and opinions is really important to creating systems that work. So, for example, if you do have, you know, really profitable companies who, you know, keep their workers pay at, you know, a level that's not a livable wage, that don't create access to healthcare, then you also have to be mindful of the fact that all the rest of us, we should be helping to support them and making sure that they have what they need. But it's about figuring out, okay, if they're taking advantage of the system to keep people down instead of lift them up, then maybe we need to change the system.
And Derek, we hear about changes to the system a lot lately as the Democratic presidential primary ramps up and Republican opponents sort of counter some of the narratives that are coming out of that. In a lot of ways, it's framed as a capitalism versus socialism debate. That's not a particularly nuanced way of framing it, but that is how it is framed. I'm wondering how in the entrepreneurial world, in the startup incubator world, those worlds are colliding, because naturally, it's a capitalistic environment that you're in, but you're possibly dealing with folks who grew up in government housing or some type of government assistance. So talk a little bit about the perspectives that they bring to this conversation.
Yeah, I think one of the reasons why I'm so excited about Cincinnati is because we are creating a new model. I look at something called the Cincinnati Access Fund, which was just launched in the past year. It was led by Mayor John Cranley, the City of Cincinnati, Cincinnati Development Fund, and Fifth Third Bank. And they came together and they creatively thought about opportunities to pool resources to support historically marginalized populations. And they came up with several million dollars that they can then invest in these businesses. And I look at how government came together, how banks came together, how the nonprofit sector came together. And I see those dollars that are now being invested in these communities. And that gives me a lot of hope and inspiration for what's possible in the future. But the reality is that requires risk. That requires listening to your community. That requires being vulnerable. And we'll see where that goes. But I'm really excited about how that example of what's happening here in Cincinnati can inspire other people across the country to think differently about how we're investing in supporting historically marginalized populations.
Okay. And Beth, talk a little bit more about that, the socialism versus capitalism unnuanced conversation that can sometimes dominate the analysis on some large media platforms, cable news. They don't really break it down enough for us to understand. How big of a challenge is that for people to make intelligent decisions about the economic future for themselves and their neighbors?
It's enormously challenging. I think that it would help for us to all start with the recognition that America is a mixed economy. We have a huge amount of government funding going into lots of industries today through the form of government contractors, through the form of our military, and all of the government contracts related to our military. So we are not a pure capitalistic society today. And we are not moving toward pure socialism, especially in the historic sense. Anybody who suggests a change to the way our economy works today is being branded as a socialist, which makes it impossible for people to really assess what is the right balance of government and industry in shaping our economy. That balance is what has made America so enormously successful. But something has to give now as we've ratcheted back our antitrust laws, for example. There is a way forward that involves some shifts to the way our government is involved in regulating the private sector that can benefit everyone without taking us toward an extreme and fundamentally different economy than we've had for the past 300 years.
You will hear more from all three of these folks and a few others at Beyond Civility, Pursuing the American Dream on September 23rd from 6 to 7:30 at the Mercantile Library. My thanks to State Rep Bridget Kelly, Beth Silvers, and Derek Brazil for joining us. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And you've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Subscribe to our podcast at WVXU.org. I'm Michael Monks.